and he says he's not selling his tickets on. He doesn't care. Like, United at home is a chance for his family to go and experience Ipswich in the Premier League. So good. Right. Colin Murray Show, Sunday mornings on Five Live. Still to come, we preview Man United Spurs. And as I've just said, Sporting Time Machine goes back to the miracle at Medina. We'll get cracking again after the 11 o'clock news.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 11 o'clock. This is Adam Porter. The Cabinet Office Minister Pat McFadden has said he doesn't accept some of the issues raised by Rosie Duffield, who's resigned as a Labour MP. Ms Duffield, who will now sit as an independent, said voters and MPs were being taken for granted and laughed at by the government in a row about the Prime Minister accepting gifts worth tens of thousands of pounds. But speaking on Sunday with Laura Koonsberg, Mr McFadden suggested she'd resigned because of wider disagreements.
I think you can see that she's been disillusioned with the party leader, with the party maybe more generally, for quite a long time. I don't think this is something that's just developed in the last few months. I'm disappointed to see her go. I like Rosie, but ultimately I'm not surprised at the decision that she's made.
Israel says it struck dozens of Hezbollah targets across Lebanon. The bombardment follows the death of the Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah in a series of strikes on Beirut on Friday. Hezbollah, which is backed by Iran and proscribed as a terrorist organisation by Western nations, including the UK, has vowed to keep fighting Israel. Tom Fletcher, a former British ambassador to Lebanon, has called for restraint from Israel.
A ground invasion will embolden Hezbollah again. It will give them back the popularity and legitimacy that has drained away from them in recent years. And to say to the Iranians, you know, it's just not in your interest for this to escalate. You know, don't dial up the violence across the regions through the militias, through the Houthis, through Hezbollah itself.
Police are investigating the death of an 8-year-old boy on a farm in Cumbria. Officers were called to the farm yesterday afternoon. They seized a firearm and arrested a man in his 60s. He's currently being questioned on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. The Conservative leadership contender Kemi Badenoch has suggested cultures where women have fewer rights than men are among those she deems less valid. In an article for the Sunday Telegraph, she claimed many stay away from discussing issues around culture for fear of being labelled xenophobic. Sir Bradley Wiggins is returning to cycling after a 3-year break. The 8-time Olympic medalist has stepped away from the sport because of his mental health. He's joining amateur cyclists on a 50-mile route around Stafford. Two giant pandas are returning to China from Japan after a tearful send-off from their fans. The pandas have been on loan to a zoo in Tokyo for 13 years. Mickey Bristow reports.
The pandas are returning home to China's Sichuan province because both have health problems, high blood pressure, and are getting old. But they'll be missed. They established themselves in people's hearts as soon as they arrived in Tokyo, providing some joy just as Japan was reeling from a massive earthquake and tsunami. Over recent days, fans have flocked to the zoo to get a final glimpse of the pandas. An impressive 12,000 people entered a lottery to be one of 200 chosen for the last half hour of viewing.
BBC News, it's 3 minutes past 11.
Matt Shawley.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, Central State of Culture Media Sport.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley.
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Colin Murray. BBC Radio 5 Live.
Welcome back, everybody. Five Lives on Sunday morning. If you're just tuning in, you've missed such an enjoyable first hour of the show. But thank you for getting here at any stage. Better late than never. Colin Murray, 10 to midday, same time every week on Five Live. And the countdown officially now on to our live sport from midday with two big Premier League commentaries. We're going to look ahead to United Spurs in just a minute from now. We've already looked ahead to the Villa Ipswich game. Ipswich Villa, let's get it right. Call, come on, behave yourself. It's very important that the detail is very important. You know, I do a lovely piece with Ipswich fans and then get it the home and away mixed up. You know what I mean? Plus our time machine with Alistair Bruce Ball. He's at Portman Road. He's ready to go. He's doing the commentary today. But of course, he was there at the 2012 Ryder Cup, the miracle at Medina. So the countdown is on to all of that. And speaking of countdowns, let's go. Our weekly sporting conundrums, which Channel 4 haven't taken any legal action against me yet. It's a grey area. It's a sticky area for them, isn't it? With me presenting Countdown in Channel 4 and then doing this. Would it be in their interest to enforce the law? I think not. It's good for both of us. Cross promotion. So up until recently, I just did these at 12 for Steve Crossman and his team. But while he was off, I did them at this time and we all loved it. Loads of texts, loads of messages on the old Twitter face and what have you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep them at 11, but I've got a few extra for Crossman later. So because he might take the hump. He's a wee bit of a prima donna that way. So with football and golf defining the next hour of the show, today's theme, get ready everyone. Footballers who have played in the Premier League and share their surname with a great golfer. And by that I mean every single one of these golfers has had at least one major and I would describe as known to any golf fans. None are obscure and some of them are so blooming obvious. So I've arranged them in order of date of birth of the golfer. So there's another just to help you along the way. But you're trying to find the footballer from the anagram who shares the surname with the golfer. No Googling, no cheating. It's just for fun. And I do look out for patterns and texts and tweets. But like those people that, do you know what I mean, monitor gambling. So that's what I'm like with that. So I'm just sad that way. Justin Morehouse, by the way, who's talking to us next, will love this. He's a huge Countdown fan, more so than he is a Manchester United. He'd rather talk for 20 minutes about Countdown and our big series final before Christmas than he would about his beloved Manchester United. Here goes. The first one. Taller Crampon. Taller Crampon. So a footballer that's played in the Premier League. Top flight. Let me just correct that. Top flight. All right, same thing. The football didn't begin with the Premier League. Top flight stroke Premier League. Same thing. Taller Crampon is the first one. Huge golfer, that one. Next one is Beans Town, and Beans is in baked beans. Beans Town. Beans Town. Shares the surname with the golfer, and the golfer's date of birth from oldest to youngest of when they were born. Pulsate Wart. P-U-L-S-A-T-E Wart. Pulsate Wart is your third one. Fourth one. Sow's Orchid. Sow's Orchid. S-O-W-S and orchid as in the flower. O-R-C-H-I-D. So obvious. Look for the most obvious golfer second name in that and text it in because you're going to get the footballer. And I love this last one. Scarily Mummy. Scarily Mummy. And it's the American spelling of mummy. So it's mommy. M-O-M-M-Y. Great footballer. Great golfer. Just great all round. That might give you the clue in terms of maybe nationalities. Right. I'll keep an eye on the socials. It's 85058 in the text. I'll do a couple or a few names for each of the right answers. So speed is of the essence. Although it is difficult this week. I'd love to outfox you in 185058 and on the socials. And as I say, Justin Morris would be very good as well. But before I return to our conundrums today, it's time to preview the big 4:30 game today in the Premier League, live on 5 Live. Of course, you know what it is. It's Manchester United against Spurs. And last year, both games marked the arrival or debut, if you like, at a particular place of an important figure for each club. And it was more fun for the team in white last season for sure than it was for the team in red.
The new manager Ange Postecoglou, his first home Premier League match begins. I need love, love. Kulusevski to the byline, drives it across, took a deflection across the face. Win. Old Trafford's first match of 2024. It's a game of give and take. Rashford on his right foot, still going. And oh, it almost opened up. Udogi came in. Oh, and there it goes. Hoyland took it on. And he flashed a left foot shot. Rashford Hoyland, what a finish that is.
Into the tunnel at Old Trafford, in front of the Stretford end. Here's the corner played in. Oh,
they played it in. Richarlison's there. A little glance in the six-yard box. There is no stopping Richarlison just now. It's 1-1 at Old Trafford. Rashford low into Hoyland trying to get it back. Rashford shot. It's in. Marcus Rashford scores at Old Trafford. Finally, for the first time since May. Benjamin Kerr, lovely. Left foot shot. What a finish. Super. Tottenham equalise in the first minute of the second half. And that's some finish from the Uruguayan. Took it into his stride, left foot, bang, 2-2.
And it has ended, honours all even. Tottenham take 4 points off Manchester United this season. Manchester United twice ahead in this match, with Sir Jim Ratcliffe watching for the first time from the director's box.
Yeah. And not only those points, but drew at home in the last meeting the season before. So while a win and two draws doesn't sound like much to write home about, they lost four in a row before that. So Spurs definitely were tails up. And they've got identical records this season in the league. Two wins, one draw, two defeats. Fair to say, though, despite pressure on both, I think Spurs' tail pointed a little further up than their host today, after the European experiences during the week. And the comedian and actor Justin Moorhouse was there on Wednesday. Thankfully, he resisted the temptation only just to rip up a season ticket, run down a touchline, throw it in Eric Ten Hag's face. So he'd be there again today, where they played a team, of course, during the week called FC 20, or as we knew them up until about 3 months ago, FC 20. How you doing, Justin?
I'm all right. It's an interesting conundrum. Somebody did point out this season, this is the first season at Old Trafford where every ticket is now in the app. So how do you throw that onto the pitch these days? Like, you can actually get arrested for that, can't you?
Right, that's like that's 32 months in jail. Like, you can't throw your phone. It's no. True. It's gone of the
I'm
day.
I'm throwing this phone thing at you, but if you can delete the app and then throw it back, I've made my point.
I'm deleting my app. That's going to be the thing. That's going to be some TikTok viral at some stage. Well, listen, you'll be back there today. You're a rain or shine fan, of course, your whole life. And joining us, though, to balance this out, she wasn't at Spurs winning 3-0 against Carabank. But before you start screaming part-time supporter, it's all good, because despite her Spurs allegiance, she currently plays on the wing for Perth Glory in Australia. So we can forgive the former Spurs player and still Spurs fan Megan Wynn for not being there. And we said good morning to Justin, and live we say good evening to Megan. How are you?
Good evening. I'm very well, thank you. How are you guys?
I'm good. Megan, yeah. I'm so jealous of you. You're in my favourite city in the world. I'm presuming you're at home in Perth at the moment.
I'm in Perth, yeah. And I've seen very few clouds since I've been here, just to make me
it's amazing. Have you been there, Colin? It's the best place in the world. The most remote city in the world, isn't it, Megan?
It is. And it's so chilled. It's just been so nice to get away from London for a little bit. I'm not going to lie.
You get out to Free Owl, mate. Got a little Creatures Brewery.
Yeah. You know, there's a reason why afternoon TV and travel channels exist, you two. So I'll just get you to pipe down about this. Unless Judith Chalmers is going to just pop in to present this, I'm going to move on.
Yeah, and better references than that. What are you going to do next when somebody takes a photograph? Come on, David Bailey.
Right, let's get straight. Well, I'll be having fun the whole way through. Do you know what? Actually, I shouldn't do this, but I'm just going to do it a second. Because there's a lot coming in. Megan, I'm not expecting you this time at night, because unlike Justin, you're in the evening, you're allowed to have a glass of wine by now. So don't worry too much, but he's a huge Countdown fan. Do you want to give me one of the conundrums, do you, Justin?
I've done three of them. I guess
give
one
me the one that
you
think's the hardest.
Is the one that used to play for Manchester City?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got that one. I've got the one that sounds like he's an actor as well, an Irish actor. And I've got the last player that Matt Busby ever signed.
Yes, do that. Do that one, because that's brilliant. And John Gibson also managed to get that right. So that's the shout out
And Scarily that's the Mommy shout out for you. Yeah.
Is Sammy McIlroy.
It is. What a shout. Scarily Mommy. There you go. The golfer, Rory McIlroy. That was the last one, which means he's the youngest on the list in terms of date of birth. Some, of course, passed away by now. But Sammy McIlroy, of course, Northern Irish, all in, absolute legend. And there you go. And I'm going to give that one to you, Justin. I'm going to give that one to Colin. You were the first two people to get it. Did you get Sow's Orchid?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
You did?
I think
go ahead.
So.
What do you think that is?
Well, I've got to be honest with you. I just did this in a purely conundrum way. I don't. Chris O'Dowd?
No, it's not. Oh. So Scott in Derbyshire, you take the absolute, because there was never a, you take the glory for all this, Scott in Derbyshire, and that's two out of the five done, and we'll leave it for now and we'll come back to them. There was never a big golfer, I don't think, called Tiger O'Dowd, but there was one called Woods, and it is of course played for Nottingham Forest under Clough and Taylor all throughout the success, and played for England, Shelton and Woods. What a 1-2 in nets there. Chris Woods is your answer to that. There you go. Right, well, we will get back to that a little bit later, your conundrums, but let's get stuck right in to the football now. It's only taken us 10 minutes to get there, so I want you to just, you know, look at it from exactly the same position, as I say, going in here, where if you lose today, you'll be 8 points off the top after six games. A draw, 7 points off the top after six games. That's more than a point a game. Let me start with you, Megan. Maybe less of a microscope on Spurs. Maybe less of a demand is a better word, but still expectations high with a manager in his second full season, talking up trophies and talking up improvement. What does a bad day today for Spurs look like? And what does a good day for Spurs today, Megan, look like?
I think if we can build on the last three results, obviously we've come in on the back of three straight wins. I think the buzz around the camp seems high and everyone seems pretty positive and speaking in the media and everything seems quite good. But I think we need to stop leaking goals. Like, you've seen in the game in the week, just this defensive errors. As long as we can keep the momentum forward, the high pressing, and have that balance defensively, then we should be good. But I think it's the consistency now. I think we've had probably not the start that we would have wanted, the uncertainty in sort of the results that we've had. I think it's just about being more consistent now and putting the performances week in, week out. We've seen that, you know, the high pressing and the high line and everything can be really good, but it's just getting the defensive errors out of the way now.
Yeah, you're bang right. And of course, it's the away form would be the worry, those three wins. Winning at home to Brentford in the Premier League, full marks, 3-1. It's not going to be an easy game. Carabag at home, you know, Coventry City away, love Cov by the way, but Coventry City away in the League Cup, three wins on the bounce is a good response to losing the Arsenal at home. But I think you'll be judged on today, as will Manchester United, though I'd say just as much, if not more pressure on your Manchester United at today. Justin, you could lose more than two of your opening six massive games in the Premier League for only the fourth time in your club's history. I mean, yeah, where's your glass right now in terms of how full it is?
Oh, my glass is half full and it's getting fuller. I'm more positive than I've been in the last 8 years, 9 years, 10 years. More positive. I don't want to be a big baby about this, right? But If it wasn't Manchester United, if it was any other team with the form we've had and the last 8-9 years we've had, the story would be different. But because it's Man United, because it's the biggest story in football, everybody's obsessed with us. You look at the table last season, we finished, you know, how many points did we finish behind Tottenham? 6 points behind Tottenham. You know, we're on the same points now. Really, it's Tottenham who should be under pressure. They're the ones who are failing this season more than we are.
You start this season with Champions League football as your target.
Mm-hmm.
You've beaten only one side in the league who started last season in the Premier League, and Villa, yep. Chelsea, Arsenal, City, Liverpool. Not only is it quite a wall to stop that progression, But you're also, you're already, if you lose today, straining to even see that wall.
If,
right, but I'm surprised that you're saying that.
You can twist any statistic. We're a handful of games into the season. You know, we got absolutely undone by Liverpool at home. And embarrassed. That was an embarrassing win. You know, and your guy seems to have settled in very quickly. He seems to have done very well. But apart from that, you know, the Brighton game was an anomaly. I've never seen us batter a team 0-0 like we did against Palace last week in the first half.
You can't batter a team 0-0. You can't batter a team 0-0.
But you know what I'm saying. I'm being facetious.
No, Colin. I don't. And that brings me on. And Megan, the only reason you're not as much involved in this is you're less contentious. I'll come to you in a second, but I must take you up on that. When a manager uses the phrase, you know, battering or play, we were brilliant when it's 0-0. Talking about younger players that can't be expected to be at the level, yet the top leagues are full of young players who are immediately
at that level.
So what do you
do, Colin? Let's have this out now, right? What do you do then? If you're Manchester United, what do? You go and you spend 500 million more than you should do on a load of players and try and get... We've been signing players for the last 8 years. It's not resembled a football club. It's ended up like a Quentin Tarantino cast. We've had aging like stars at the end of their career coming for a swan song.
I think
the club is on better footing than it's been for a long time. You know, unfortunately for this season, we've not had a number nine. We haven't got a number nine playing. You know, we haven't.
Yeah, fans of 99% of all football clubs have got a very small violin out, but you are in a situation at the moment with financial fair play that, as your manager says, that's not going to happen. Where you are this season is those young players have to come through. So that's why I'm surprised. But you're a Stretford Ender, I'm listening. But I was surprised you said it was half full. I thought with the start to this season and the frustration building up and the performance midweek, you're lucky to get a draw. You were there, right? That, like, yeah, but you would be Colin, really peed off Colin, this morning, but you're not.
Genuinely, Colin, you're listening to a lot of fans. You listen to pundits. You listen to fans that are on phone-ins. You listen to people on YouTube channels. The majority of Manchester United fans that I know are not expecting us to win the league this season. The majority of Manchester United fans are quite happy with Ten Hag. They don't like the football at the moment, but things are clicking into place. There are so many bright positives. You know, Martinez is an incredible defender. De Ligt is looking better than the player everybody said he was going to be. Anana's actually having the confidence to pass the ball to somebody who can take it on a half turn. You know, we've got the Waldorf and Statler show with Casemiro and Eriksen, which one plays. You know, but we've got Kobbie Mainoo. He's an incredibly talented young man. He's coming through. Garnacho's hitting form. Rashford looks like he's a bit better this season. You know, if Højlund goes on and scores six games in a row, suddenly everything's looking a lot brighter.
Pots and pans.
Of course.
Pots and pans,
of course.
Ifs.
Do you know what? Of course. But if you're asking me where my glasses, do you know what I've split the G. That's where I am. I've split the G. Yeah. That's exactly where my pint is at the moment.
I love it.
Satisfying
and I say, listen,
goal.
You're in the corners. You're having the pints at the back of the stand. You know, I can have a little look in the forums like I do, but you're in the back of the stands. You're having those pints. I didn't find that level of optimism in the United forums I was looking at, but like, this is why we have people on Know the Club. And from a Spurs point of view, I mean, Megan, Ange Ball arrived with a bang. When you're chatting to your Spurs fans now, albeit from the other side of the world, following it intently, second full season, is he still your big Ange? Where's your glass?
Yeah, I'm a really big fan. I like him. I think just the difference in the enjoyment in watching the game at the minute compared to previous seasons, it's been a hard slog. But I think the majority of people like him as a person, which is massive for the club, and like his philosophy. I think it's going to take time. I think, like I said, the uncertainty and the unpredictability of us at the minute is because of the way that we're playing. But I think in the long run, I think it's going to be exciting if we can keep Son. And that's another thing to think about today. If he's not playing, sort of what happens there and the creativeness that he brings. I think he scored 4 goals in the last 7 games versus United. So if he does miss out, which sounds like he might do at the minute, that's another thing to think about, who comes in to replace him and bring that creativity that we're going to need.
Yeah, absolutely. The waveform's just so bad, isn't it, though? It's 3 Premier League away games you've won since November 2023. So there's no side who've been ever present in the top flight since then, a few victories. But that's that inconsistency that you're worried about. And as I absolutely get it. I mean, Son was 13 chances in open play in the top flight this season. No other player can match that. But actually, you look at Solanke's off the mark. Johnson's been firing him in the last couple of games, and fit and healthy, that three excite me. Although I take your point, Megan, it's a bit like the Crystal Maze, gold and silver. Do you know what I mean? You got to look at the back as well. But I like that front three. Yeah. That excites me.
Yeah, I think Solanke's shown in a lot, especially in the last game, just what an all-round player he is with his hold-up play and the work rate. I mean, the pressing that he puts in as well. I think he's started to look like a great player, and you can kind of see why Ange's brought him in. I think he's definitely going to hit some good form now, especially, like you said, Brennan Johnson coming in as well, and he started to get some goals. So things are looking good, especially attacking-wise, so...
Yeah, I like him. I like Ange in his interviews and stuff, even just that clip that was playing. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I like the way he says things. Oh, yeah, it's just everyone's face in a wheel and they spin it and you're under pressure. And I like that. But I think what he does do, Ange Postecoglou, is he rightfully says the standard that we should hit, Megan, is winning things. And I think it's good to say that, that if he says, well, of course it is. Why else go to games? You support a big club. Spurs are a huge club. And of course it should be that. So in a way, he puts a lot of the pressure on himself, doesn't he?
Yeah, and I think he's very sure of what he wants to do and what he wants to bring to the club, and doesn't look like that's going to change anytime soon. So I think the sooner kind of everyone gets behind him and is on board with what he's doing, like the club will get there. And like you said, the relationship that he's built with his players is massive. And coming from my point of view, I think having a manager that they can rely on and talk to and get to know on a personal level as well is going to be massive for the club. I think we've seen in previous managers, that's not always been the case. But from my personal point of view, I think having a manager that sort of you can trust and go and talk to about things and put their arm around you when things do get tough, I think it's important.
Hmm. Justin, this is why I think if you're neutral today, you're tuning into that game for what's wrong as much as what's right. Could Spurs ship a whole load of goals? Could United make Spurs look like world beaters today? It's a great neutral game. And that kind of would worry me if I was both of yous, because from smashing them to making them look like the best team in the world, I could see both things happening. And that's again, it's the biggest cliche in football, consistency. Hardly any club has it. Only the very best do. But that's what makes today exciting for the neutral, and a bit more nauseating when you have your pie and your vegan pie and pint before the game today.
my vegan pie and my zero pint. I have a fake, aren't I? I just think I think Manchester United are a cruise ship that needs turning. They're a big change. Everything that people say about it is right. You know, the guy's won two trophies. He keeps telling us this. Last season, eighth wasn't good enough. He's got to finish top four this season, and I think he will do, and I think it starts today. I mean, it could be anything today. It could be four all, couldn't it? It's got that sniff about it, hasn't it?
It really does. It really does. I think it's one of those that you could be nil real time
it'll
for
be nil,
today.
Nil.
But... yeah, but that's what you don't want. If you're chasing top four, Megan, or are you looking to win a trophy? It's the last thing you want is hearing the previews and hearing everyone down the pub saying we could get smashed today, or we could smash them.
Yeah, I think either way, it's going to be a bit of chaos, whatever happens with these two teams.
Yeah, I mean, I like Spurs. I've not got no truck with Spurs. I think Spurs are an attractive football club, and I've always been. I do feel this about Spurs, and I'm going to talk about something else apart from Man United. I have never seen a marriage more unlikely than the one of Ange and Daniel Levy. I can't see that being a 10-year tenure. Can you? I can't see that being forever.
It might work professionally, but I can't imagine them getting stuck on a lift. Do you know what I mean?
No,
there'd be a lot of silence.
Ange just got right. The thing is, I follow Celtic as well, and he was a great loss when he left Celtic, and I think he is the last kind of one of the last kind of honest managers. He's not, but he's not. If he gets sacked, he'd be like, "That's fine, I'll go do something else." He's such a good human being, isn't he?
Yeah, he comes across like that. He comes across like that.
But I love him. I think he's an incredible manager.
Yeah. So, Megan, are you, I've got to ask you this before we see what other conundrums we have. I'm not ruling you out, Megan, if you got any of these conundrums, but it's a bit of a nerdy thing, but we do in the show. But have you held on for a night out? Are you having an early night tonight? What's your Sunday schedule? Because for anyone just tuning in, Megan Wynne, of course, now plays for Perth Glory, and it's Sunday evening for you. I'm guessing it's would it be 11:30 at night now where you are?
Yeah, so the game will be late tonight. And I don't think my manager will be listening to this, as we don't really get the BBC here, but I don't think I'll be staying up just because of how late it'll be. I've got training, and we train at 8 a.m. before it gets hot. So my day starts at about 6 a.m. tomorrow, so I'll be up. So I don't think probably from a professional point of view it'll be great, but I'll definitely watch the game back tomorrow and try and stay off socials. So I don't know the score. No, it'll be difficult. But
No chance. There's no way you can avoid the score. Manchester United, BBC Spurs, sound. No chance anywhere in the world. No, you can't do it. You can't avoid it for a whole day when you're a footballer. That is impossible. Like, I'm calling that out. I remember I do this cycle ride. I've done three times. Hopefully going to do it again, actually. When we cycle through the Masai Mara in Kenya, and, you know, everything runs out before football tops. And, you know, we could listen to Premier League commentaries in the middle of nowhere. Somebody would have a radio. There's no way you're avoid. As a footballer, you cannot get through. If you do that, Megan, it'll be the greatest achievement of all time. No chance.
Yeah.
Right, Megan, did you write any of them down? Any of the conundrums down, or did you just think, what are these nerds doing?
I haven't. I'm not going to lie. I haven't written them down.
That's all right. It's all right. We know what we are. Justin, what's the third one that you got? And then I'll match it to listeners who got it right, because there's only going to do a couple of shout outs per one.
Paul Stewart.
Yes, Paul Sait Wart, Paul Stewart, Payne Stewart, of course, the US Open winner, born 1957. I'm going to also, Benny did very well last week. He struggled a bit this week. He got Chris Woods and Sammy McElroy late after the buzzer. It doesn't count. He got Paul Stewart. Well done to you. And Payne Stewart. He said he thought of Payne Stewart, checked it, didn't think it was there. Absolutely gutted. Mick said, I only got the first one, taller crampon. I'm also going to give that to Hendon Dave. It's the great Arnold Palmer, four-time master, the eldest of the lot, born back in 1929, and taller crampon is Carlton Palmer.
Carlton.
So, there you go. Going into the news, Alistair Bruce Ball is going to eat this up. It's food and drink for him, let me tell you, working in both football and golf for Five Live. But the only footballer that shares a second name with a great golfer that we haven't got yet, no one's allowed to say, if Justin's got it, you're not allowed to say. Megan doesn't care. At Beanstown, as in baked beans, Beanstown. Now, I'm going to give you a little clue going into the news. 85058 on the text. It's the only one no one's got. 85058 in the text. And I'll keep a little look as well on the socials. By the way, I say nobody's managed to get it. Three people have, but they've already had shout outs. So you only get, you can't just rule the roost here. We have to spread the wealth. So Beanstown. Justin, do not WhatsApp me once you're off air with the answer, okay? Okay. We're done. You had your chance on air, okay?
I think I know what it is now.
Don't say you can't. Okay, WhatsApp.
Can I give a clue?
No. Is the clue going to be there's two golfers?
No.
Okay, no more. No, you can't give a clue. No. But there are two golfers that have this surname, actually, from different generations. Yes. Justin Murray, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And Megan, I was going to say, because I was looking you up to see how you're doing over there. And you know, you've got a namesake who played the Deaf Institute this week. It was a number one headlining gig. And I thought, she's doing well doing indie rock in a student venue in Manchester and playing for Perth Glory at the weekend. So well done on that travelling. There's another Megan Wynne out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. Well, listen, Megan, thank you so much for joining us all the way from Perth and for talking to us just before you go to bed. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. That was lovely. chatting to Megan, chatting to Justin, doing our little conundrums, got a lovely Sunday feel, looking ahead to the big game at 4:30, having a bit of a quiz as well. And listen, we're late to the news. We're going to go to that now. So a bit tight, but we still got enough time. We're still going to have like 17 minutes to do this. So we'll do it really quick because the Sporting Time machine is out. Because it was this weekend, 12 years ago, the miracle at Medina, the Ryder Cup. So we're going to do that after James Gregg has our sports headlines. He'll be looking forward to that. And also our news headlines first is Giuliano Cassidy.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Israel says it's killed another Hezbollah official a day after announcing the death of their leader, Hassan Nasrallah. The military says airstrikes on Lebanon yesterday killed Nabil Kaouk, a member of the Central Council. Hezbollah hasn't responded yet. Police are investigating the death of an 8-year-old boy in Cumbria after an incident involving a firearm. Emergency services were called to a farm in the Walkop area and the boy was taken to hospital with life-threatening injuries to his head and face. A man in his 60s has been arrested on suspicion of gross negligence manslaughter. The Cabinet Office Minister, Pat McFadden, has defended Keir Starmer after a Labour MP quit. Rosie Duffield has criticised the Prime Minister for accepting gifts from a party donor. Mr. McFadden said he's disappointed by her decision, but also says she's been disillusioned with the party for quite a long time. And the Conservative leadership contender Kemi Badenoch has suggested cultures where women have fewer rights than men are among those she deems less valid. She says or claims many people stay away from discussing issues around culture for fear of being labelled xenophobic. Sport now with James Gregg.
Giuliano, thank you very much indeed. The deciding one-day international between England and Australia is well underway now. England bat first in Bristol, which is where we can find Nikesh Raghani.
And so far, the weather here is dry. Fingers crossed for the rest of the afternoon. England off to a flyer with the bat, thanks largely to Phil Salt, but he has just fallen. The first wicket to fall for the Australians. Salt gone for 45 from just 27 balls. Ben Duckett, his opening partner, is still there on 17. Will Jacks has just come out to join him. And England are currently 62 for one in the eighth over.
TMS is where you can hear that one to a conclusion. Ball by ball commentary on Five Sports Extra. Manchester United boss Erik ten Hag says they need to take their chances and score more goals if they're to get a result against Tottenham in the Premier League later. It's 10th versus 11th as things stand after a lukewarm start, really, for both sides to start the new season. And ten Hag is expecting a high-quality clash this afternoon.
I think it will be a very intensive game. It's always against Tottenham, and it is, I think, also it's our style as well. So I think it's going to be a very dynamic, attractive game.
4:30 it kicks off. It's live here on Five Live. That is the second of a double header on Five Live's Premier League Sunday with Steve Crossman and the usual gang. Prior to that, we'll have Aston Villa looking to go joint top of the Premier League table this afternoon if they can pull off an expected victory against newly promoted side Ipswich Town, who are winless, by the way, in their return to the Premier League. The Villa boss, Unai Emery, says that he's prepared his side for the threat that's posed by Ipswich.
Every match we are playing is being different game plan, because to compete against this team with their game plan is to adapt and try to impose our game plan. And of course, each town is different and we are trying to build a team.
4:30 is the second match. That one kicks off at 2. Elsewhere in Rugby Union's Premiership, the reigning champions Northampton put their opening day defeat well behind them with a deserved 30-24 win over Exeter Chiefs at Franklin's Gardens. Saracens beat Sale by 45-26. And switching codes to Rugby League Super League, Warrington set up a Super League playoff semi-final against Hull KR courtesy of George Williams' golden point drop goal in extra time against St Helens. It finished 23-20 in the end. More sport in Five Live Sport, of course. The name says it all, doesn't it, really, from midday. But some more sporting chat to come here with Colin. Rolling the clock back 12 years next here on Five Live.
If you love your pop, this is right up your street.
Pop Top 10 with Scott and Rylan.
We've picked some of the most hotly contested questions of all time and decided to settle them once and for all with the help of some special guests. We're taking it very seriously.
I can't let things like that slide on this show.
No, come on!
What are you on about?
Don't put words into my mouth.
I won't, darling. You're spatting them yourself.
Search Pop Top 10 to listen on BBC Sounds.
Five Live, the voice of the UK.
With Colin Murray.
Yes, thank you very much, James. And yes, we're turning the clock back because that is Glory Days by Bruce Springsteen. And every time you hear it on the Colin Murray Show, that means we're finishing the programme by jumping into our sporting time machine and heading back in history to relive a classic sporting moment. This one's a direct anniversary. So on this day in 2012, we'd have been waiting on or just starting the second day of the 39th Ryder Cup as Europe's best golfers took on the cream of the USA over 3 days. This time it was at Medina Country Club in Illinois. It was 5-3, I think, after the first day. But on this day in 2012, the USA won 3 of the 4 morning foursomes. Then the first 2 of the afternoon four balls, so there was 10-4 up at that stage. On this day, they would have taken a 10-4 lead. That's where the miracle begins, so that's where I'm going to stop. Because taking us through it, a member of the Five Live Sport team already in place to call it at Portman Road. And our first live commentary game today, Ipswich Town, Aston Villa, 2 p.m. But he's turned up early. He's had to plug in his own ISDN. He's had to wipe down his own mic. Nobody else is even there. And that's because as part of our golf team, he remembers this day amongst the greatest of his career. He was at Medina to witness what happened next from 10-4. Alistair Bruce Ball's with us. Hi, Alistair Bruce Ball.
Good morning. Good morning, Colin. You have transported me right back there straight away. And I mean, you know, I chuckle a little bit as you saying sort of greatest day. I mean, I remember it, Colin, as my favourite day, my most, you know, memorable day of work for the BBC ever, having joined Five Live back in 2001. Obviously did absolutely nothing to contribute to the miracle at Medina, but was incredibly lucky to be there to witness it. It was. And I think particularly, Colin, because it happened after an incredible summer of sports. So we were just coming off the back of London 2012. And it's one of those things when you get to a sporting event, and you think, no, we've had too much this year. This sort of thing can't happen. You can't keep having the dream happen. And then it happened.
It was. Many people not getting into it say it was the last good year full stop. Not just in sport, but the background to this is, right, if we talk about Europe winning the Ryder Cup in 1985, that was an earthquake, right? So a tournament dominated by so long by the USA. So Europe, or before that Great Britain, winning it was an anomaly. But we go into 2012, that wasn't the case anymore. The balance of power shifted somewhat in terms of the Ryder Cup. Europe had won a hatful, but you'd 9 of the top 11 players in the world in this USA team. And it was on home soil. So talk to me about getting to, talk to me about getting to 10-4 and what the thought was amongst the team.
Well, that's why, Colin, that's why it was so unlikely. And we had Bernard Gallagher as one of the summarisers on our commentary team. And as a former, you know, European Ryder Cup player and captain, he was the sort of one lone voice of optimism. So us sort of cynical commentators, you know, and producers and engineers have given up on this. Oh, it's going to be terrible. The show's going to be awful tomorrow. How are we going to broadcast this for hours and hours? It's already going to be over after the first couple of matches. And Bernard was the one who was saying, do you know what? If they turn this one round and then they win that one and possibly the first 4 singles, and you're thinking, come on, Bernard, what are you talking about? Because they were utterly dominant. They were utterly dominant in the match, and that's why it looked so unlikely. And then, as you say, Colin, the crucial thing, so I remember in all the celebrations on the 18th green at the end, 2 things that stick with me in particular. One was Justin Rose pointing to the Seve Ballesteros monogram on the European outfits, because obviously Jose Maria Olazabal was captain. You know, we'd only relatively recently, you know, lost the great Seve Ballesteros, who is the greatest inspiration of all European Ryder Cup teams. So that was one thing that played into the narrative. But the other thing was that the first person I interviewed was Lee Westwood, and he pointed to Ian Poulter and he said, last night, 5 birdies last night, that is why the miracle happened. So that was the bit you were talking about, where the comeback begins.
Right, the last 2 purrins, it was Garcia Donald and McIlroy Poulter out against Wood Stricker. And who was it? Was it Duffner Johnson, wasn't it? Yes, it was.
Duffner Johnson in the last match, yeah.
Yeah. And as you say, 5 birdies in a row to go 1 up. alongside Rory McIlroy. And it was, I mean, let's just do, we're going to go to cricket in just 1 second, but this is a great point to break for the cricket. Let's just do the maths in this, right? It finished 14.5 to 13.5, right?
Yeah.
With the world's best golfers, 24 of them there. Poulter, a pick, the lowest rank, or I think probably would have been the lowest rank any player there. Mr. Ryder Cup, he wins all 4 points. Without him, there's no miracle. I think without Seve and that emotional factor and that spur, I think without, and then of course, in terms of the actual golf player, without Poulter, we're not talking today, are we, Ali?
No, and he's a classic example, a bit like Colin Montgomery in the Ryder Cup as well, where his game just went to a completely different level, and he loved that. He loved the battle against the Americans, you know, loved the individual match play, and the fact you can lose a hole and you can rack up a big number, it doesn't matter, because on the next tee you're right back in it and you can win the next one. And that night, and I remember standing, I wasn't commentating on the game, Andrew Cotter does an amazing bit of commentary on that fifth consecutive birdie putt that rolls in on the 18th, where I think he says something like, does he have it? And then the ball drops in and the whole place goes nuts, and he says, of course he does, because of course he did, because he was absolutely dead eye, and there was barely any light left. We were watching that sort of in the gloaming, in the fading light. It goes in, and then you caught Poulter's eyes, who were he was just on a different planet, and his eyes are bulging like some rabid madman, and he's screaming at the rest of the European team, and they took inspiration from that, and then the Sunday happened.
Yeah, I love it, and that's a perfect place to head to Bristol, to the County Ground, buzzing the home side after Lords on Friday, the one day decider against Australia, Nikesh Raghani. There's been a lot going on in the open exchanges.
Absolutely, yeah. England were buzzing and they were off to a brilliant start in that opening partnership between Phil Salt and Ben Duckett. Salt was the first man out, Aaron Hardy taking the wicket. Good catch by Manus Labuschagne out on the boundary. And Hardy has just taken his second wicket as well. Will Jack's gone for a four-ball duck, so the Aussies back into it, pegging England back just a touch. It was an absolute beauty from Hardy, that second one. It was a ball just outside off, which jagged back, took the top of the off stump, bowled Will Jack's through the gate. Didn't have a clue about it. So Harry Brook, the captain, has come out to join Ben Duckett, who's on 25. England 70 for 2 in the 10th over.
Absolutely love it. Thank you very, very much, Nikesh. And you can listen to that live on 5 Live Sports Extra. Ali Bruce Ball is in our sporting time machine to finish the show before 5 Live Sport. We're at the Miracle at Medina. We're into the Sunday. So, Ali, I have an epic 4.5 minute mix of key moments from the Sunday. I think we talk first, then play. Because I've been going back and forth in this all morning. Do you play it then? I think we talk and then we play. Now, this seems like a weird thing to point out, but Rory McIlroy got his tee off time wrong, right?
Yep.
Now, my mate used to turn up late for Sunday five-a-side every week, but that's because he was out boozing on the Saturday night. This is Rory McIlroy. This is the Ryder Cup. These people have people. These people's people have people. And I wonder, was there something in that welcome distraction almost of the challenge ahead, something to concentrate on psychologically for half an hour rather than the score?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many factors to that as well, Colin, because if he turns up, say, 2 or 3 minutes later, he gets scrubbed, Europe lose the point, the miracle just can't even happen, and then you've got a totally different story on your hands. How on earth did that happen? We got wind of it, you know, as we were sort of on the range and on the first tee and sort of building up to the first match of the afternoon, that he wasn't on the grounds and he was being, you know, rushed to the grounds, you know, with a police escort. I think it had come about because he was watching some television coverage that had the times not in Eastern times that we were operating on, but times on the other coast in the States. So, it was a remarkably confusing story. But I think you're right, Colin. I think it probably didn't relax anyone else in the team. But, I mean, Rory McIlroy, that must have been like for him playing as a kid. Get out the car, get the shoes on, grab the clubs, off we go first tee, and I'm third match out and away we go.
And I think that's, we divided into three, and I'm looking at the clock, so we've got about 2 minutes we can spend in each. You divide it into three. You talk about the early rush of blue, and radio does that thing with golf that it's an army of ants, gets into cracks and crevices that no normal human being can reach. So you're all out there as a team. That spider's web has been spun. Talk to me about what it was like as it transpired that small glimmer of hope was now a proper crack in the door.
Yeah, so what Jose Maria Olazabal had to do was top load the singles order. And so what was going to be crucial later in the day was the players who probably weren't in quite as good a form were still going to have to bring it home and win some big points, because Europe needed 8 points minimum to get the draw to retain the Ryder Cup. So Donald Poulter, McIlroy, Rose were the first four matches out. And the funny thing is, Colin, with the way that we cover it, so I got sent out with Justin Rose and Phil Mickelson's game. But the way we cover a Ryder Cup is that whoever goes with the first match, which I think that was Luke Donald against Bubba Watson, you take that match to the 17th green as a commentator, and then you stop, and that match goes down the 18th, and Ian Carter is waiting to commentate on the 18th. So we've got a commentator on the 18th, one on the 17th, one on the 16th, one on the 15th, and Simon Dyson, who I was working with, we had to stop at the 15th in the Rose Mickelson match, which was another one that was absolutely pivotal, and he hadn't quite understood what we were doing, and he looked at me and said, "What? What, we don't do the last..." He couldn't believe that we weren't going to get to witness those incredible closing holes, which were 16, 17, 18. But that's the way that we cover it. So it's a slightly different way to, you know, I mean, the European golfers are looking at that very differently in the listeners, but that's how it works for us.
Oh, that is brilliant. I love it. Did you get any of it as well? But yes, you're right. You get that 17th, you see that 40-foot putt from Justin Rose.
Well, yeah, we
you
didn't know, do it. We took it all the way and then missed that, yeah.
But you had such an important point, which, yes, okay, you've top-loaded, you've front-loaded the order, then you're still pulling it off against major winners, you're still pulling it off against world number ones, but you do it, and then you've got to actually almost pull off something bigger, which is now you're back in it, you've got to get it over the line, and it became a dogfight in the middle, didn't it? Mini comebacks, USA push ahead, back comes Europe, USA push ahead, back comes Europe. Yeah. So before Europe even took the lead for the first time since the very first point this Ryder Cup, what was that mini comebacks uncertainty bit like? We talk about it less.
Well, suddenly that's the point. So they get 5 points on the board. So the top five matches all go Europe's way. So suddenly they're in a position to do it. And then you are looking at the likes of, you know, Lee Westwood, who's been a fabulous Ryder Cup player for Europe, but wasn't in his greatest form, fighting tooth and nail to beat Matt Kuchar. In the end, he did that pretty comfortably. I think that got the match to 12 all at the point. What I remember as well, Colin, about the closing matches were the Americans, not only the crowd, but the players suddenly realising what might happen to them and the headlines that might follow of sort of throwing this incredible lead away. And Jim Furyk lost to Sergio Garcia and Steve Stricker lost to Martin Keimer in the crucial match. And my memories of those two American guys in particular were white as a sheet. Honestly, you could just feel the pressure. And I particularly remember those two, I think, really struggled up the 18th. And that's what it does to you. And the European players that day responded. But I just remember them looking utterly haunted and almost as if they were powerless to stop it.
Yeah. Miracles after miracles. You're absolutely right. Once it was game on again, Garcia, of course, won the last two holes against Jim Furyk.
Yeah,
so it was a miracle after a miracle to get to that stage. Miss putts that completely changed it. And the Americans, there was an element of bottling it. We can say that all these years later. Now, I think we hit play in the mix now, Alistair Bruce Ball. It's epic. Yep. It's four and a half minutes. I think we do the mix and then that'll give us the winning moment and then we're there. Because we could talk about this until the Ipswich game kicks off, but if Crossman will get annoyed.
If we've got time, Colin, so hit it, let's do it. And I'll tell you a little story from that 18th hole of where I was standing and what I saw as it played out.
That's a trail forward. That's why he's the master. Did you hear that? Who would tune out now? Here we go.
Donald in a navy blue sleeveless sweater, white shirt underneath, and the silhouette of Seve Ballesteros proudly on his breast, settles himself and ready for the first tee shot here on the final day of the 39th Ryder Cup with the sun shining at Medina.
The American media are reporting that Rory McIlroy is not yet on the course. We don't know the reason for this. As I say, this is all based on American media reports, but that he is trying to get here with the help of a police escort. Where have all the good men gone
and where are all the gone? Splash of white sand, the ball lands and tracks towards the hole. It's wonderful from Luke Donald, and he looks up to the flags of Europe that are flying. Surely has closed out this match. He's put a point on the board, and now there are 3 points between the United States and Europe.
and Snedeker misses, and that is it, because Paul Laurie is 3.5 feet away. The pair of them shake hands, and it makes the overall match score USA 10, Europe 8.
Will it? It will not, and the match is over, and Keegan Bradley has lost to Rory McIlroy. Another point on the board for Europe. Who needs alarm clocks when you're the world number one?
And the cap comes off from Webb Simpson. He knows that Poulter won't take more than two from where he is. And they shake hands. And Ian Poulter has delivered yet again for Europe at a Ryder Cup. It's a stunning performance. And if Europe are to come from this position that looked so hopeless yesterday to retain the trophy, it will be down more to this man than anyone else. Ian Poulter with a stunning win last night. And the match is all square. Having been 10-6 down going into the final day, it's now 10-all.
Glances at the hole, sends the puck on its way, this for victory. It looks good. It's straight into the middle of the hole! And a big punch of the air, and then a very, very sporting handshake between Phil Mickelson and Justin Rose. What a performance by the Englishman. He has dug one out of the fire here. And with that birdie finish, Justin Rose has snatched a vital point for Europe that levels it up at 11 each.
And Lee Westwood hauls out to win the match 3-2. You know, that's his 21st Ryder Cup point, Lee Westwood. One of the towers of European strength in this great competition. So Westwood wins 3-2, and it's now 12-all. Furyk is ready to putt here for the half.
Sends it on its way.
Shot
and
he's missed on the right edge. And he's got his hands on his knees and he's looking down on the green. He's three-putted the last to lose to Sergio Garcia. He was one up with two to play. And Europe have a massive point there that looked so unlikely half an hour ago. Garcia has come through. Furyk has capitulated. And my goodness me, the moment has got to the United States. And Europe are ahead 13-12, 1 point away from retaining the trophy.
Martin Kaymer, this to retain the Ryder Cup for Europe on the 18th green at Medina, sends it on its way.
And the cup is safely in European hands. And he's lifted aloft. Martin Kaymer's the hero. Retained the cup. Somehow Europe have found a way. The comeback to end all comebacks achieved in hostile territory. And somewhere a man called Seve, the golfing patron saint of lost causes, is smiling down the broadest Seve smile you've ever seen.
But this to make sure the Ryder Cup ends in a draw. He's missed it. And he waits for the concession.
And he's given it to Francesco Molinari. That means that Europe have not only retained the Ryder Cup, they've won!
Goodness me. What do you say to that? What do you say to that? Alistair Bruce Ball tickets to the 18th. Well, it's perfectly set up. What a finish.
What a commentary line from Ian Carter, the golfing patron saint of lost causes, yeah, invoking the spirit of Seve. I mean, it's just our position, Colin, in covering golf at that level. For the radio, you don't get closer to the sport in any other sport than you do. We're inside the ropes. We are right next to the players. You're close enough to sort of tap them on the shoulder at times. And you've got to be very careful with that and very respectful of it. But what I remember is on the 18th, so Kaymer off the tee found the bunker. And we are standing and watching. And because we're so close to the other European players, I stuck a mic under Graham McDowell's nose, who was the fella, obviously, who won the crucial point in 2010 to win the Ryder Cup at Celtic Manor. So you immediately got him on Five Live talking about the shot that Kaymer's about to hit. So you're pretty much kind of in the European team, yeah, as the action is being played out. And then my final memory is when all the celebrations were going on the 18th green and the American fans disappeared like a shot. So it was just a giant European party. There was a huddle of four Englishmen, Donald, Poulter, Rose and Westwood. And I sort of, I was down on my knees and just literally stuck a mic in, probably a little bit risky as they sort of bounced up and down and were singing Championes, Championes and giving it all of that just to get the atmosphere on. And then as they walked away, eventually, one of them had dropped a pair of quite fancy sunglasses on the 18th green at Medina. And I thought I would, and they'd gone anyway. And I picked them up and I thought, I might have those as a souvenir, actually. So I've
those.
exactly. That's but it was amazing, Colin. Amazing
I'm
day.
I'm so glad that didn't finish with, and I gave them back. Absolutely getting it. What a memento. And funny enough, the way that Bonnie sang that last line, the clip that I took out in order to fit to go into the instrumental end of that song was the clip of you and G-Mac walking up the 18 together, because you need to hear it all. Yeah. A little clip of it doesn't work. It's so lovely when you just hear him talk about, I didn't get the point today myself, I don't think, but this is a team. And it was just, he was just, the emotion coming out of him was amazing. I think the greatest bubble bursting day in the history of golf, in other words, people tuning in who wouldn't usually watch golf and getting swept away.
Yeah,
but it was just simply out. We may never see the likes again, Alistair Bruce.
And also, Colin, very finally and quickly, you know, a great sporting day like that needs great celebrations. And obviously the European players went off and did their bit. I remember that as from the Five Live point of view of being one of the great nights out, because at some point we couldn't get a beer beyond midnight unless we crossed the county line. And I remember getting into a taxi and I was ankle deep in peanut shells, and a guy looked like he played in ZZ Top driving us to some bar where they had a sort of one of those passport photo machines in the bar. And so we all crammed in there, the sort of team of engineers, producers, commentators. We've got this brilliant photo of us all crammed together. It was just an incredible day of work. And, you know, it was unforgettable.
And 12 years ago this weekend. Alistair Bruce-Paul, thank you very much. Looking forward to the Ipswich Villa game today. Enjoy it. And yeah, cheers for that. What a way to end the show. Thank you. Cheers. Thank you. What a reason to be 30 seconds late. That story. That's the way I see it. Steve Crossman. But let me just say Adrian and Redding, Aidan and Devon, Charlie Mullen, Steve Rush. Well done. You got the last of our conundrums. Beanstown.
Wow.
Was indeed the footballer.
Wow.
Ben, hold on. Was the footballer Ben Watson, shares the surname with Tom and Bubba. However, being the Democrat that I am, I also have three conundrums just for you guys,
well,
if you would like
you.
Them, if you're not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater here.
Oh, that's long gone. It's long gone. The bath is empty and has been for at least 7 days. But we'll take three. In fact, I think three is more manageable, given Julianne Laurent is here, who never gets any.
What? And I got more than you.
And Nader Manure is here, who always gets the ball. We'll be fine.
Yeah. That used to be the case. I feel like we're talking about the United in the 90s here. You know? Because I actually think you've done really well. I don't think you get the credit for how much improved you are now. Because he's right. You used to, Julian, I'm talking about you.
You used to be terrible at these. Yeah,
but you're getting much better.
Thank you. Ego's already sizable. Right, what have we got?
Right, so as I said earlier, right, and I'm going to make it a bit more tricky for you guys to think on a weekly basis. Three conundrums where the footballer is the conundrum, but they share a second name with a great golfer. Okay. And what's great, I think if you win a Masters, you're great, right? You look at these three names of the golfers, and I wouldn't need to explain to you who they are. Put it that way.
Okay.
So, going to give you a couple of clues. None of them are based on a British golfer, right? So none of the namesakes are British golfers. And only one of the footballers, which is the actual conundrum, is British.
Okay.
There you go. Right.
Jules, you're in.
Here we go. First one. Oh, did I also say that I've arranged them in the order of the bur-